Hello, welcome to Diving Into Writing with me, Lucinda Pebray and Anna Singh. Join us on our writing journey. Hello, welcome to Diving Into Writing, episode 33.
Hello. And we're going to talk today about rules. There seem to be many, many rules about writing. So many that you might never feel you could start. This made me think about an artist, Picasso. because people say this, and I don't know if it's true, but we can debate it, that to do abstract art that's a squiggle and a splodge, you still have to be a proper trained artist that can do a perfect line drawing of a person, for example. And then, if you want, you can depart from the rules and just do a squiggle and a splodge.
Mm. So, is art... there's a whole podcast on that, Anna. Isn't it?
Yeah.
Is art just subjective? Is it got to have meaning? Oh, yes.
Yeah. And do you need to be someone who takes in, learns all the rules, abides by all the rules, and then breaks them? Or can you just start breaking them straight away?
What about people who are free spirits?
Yeah.
Well, do you remember in the writing class, we read something that didn't have... Did it not have speech marks?
Yes, and sometimes poetry doesn't. I mean, you know, it might not have any punctuation. It might not have capital letters. There's a poet called E. Cummings who wrote his name without any capital letters.
Can I just say that that bus was very noisy? Go away! It's unusually warm here in Sheffield for February, yes. So we've got the door open. So you can probably hear the traffic.
Very true.
Yeah.
And if it gets very bad, I'll close it. But anyway, where were we? Whether you can learn all the rules and then start to break them, or whether you can start to break them and be free spirit, and whether you need even capital letters or... I think to not get too broad about this, we could start somewhere, and we could have started with grammar, but I don't think we will. You wanted to start... You naturally went to think about the rules of genre, so maybe we could start with that.
Yeah. But that depends who you talk to. So, yeah. So when you're talking rules, do you ask the question, do you need to know them in order to break them?
Hmm.
Well, there are so many people making up rules about writing, and they write their own books on what the rules should be, or how you should plot, or how you don't need to plot, or... So, yeah. So first of all, I think that there are two different types of rules. I think there are well-accepted rules, mm-hmm. in writing, like you said, grammar.
Yeah.
And then I think there are rules that arguably are made up by individuals.
Yeah.
And perhaps they're just their rules. When you're talking about story grid, because you know I use story grid an awful lot, so Sean Coyne has a lot of rules around genre, and he talks about the conventions and the obligatory scenes that each of these genres should have. And he would say that in order for a story to be satisfying, that each story should have all those elements in there. Because when a reader picks up a Western, wanting to read about the fight for justice, the little man against society, that there's a certain expectation.
Ah, yeah. I think that's an important word, isn't it? Expectations.
That the audience, that your reader, is picking that book up for. So if you bought a romance novel and it didn't have any romance in it, you'd be quite disappointed and probably give it a one-star review.
Yeah.
So I think it depends on where you're looking at. Because if you're writing in your journal and you're just being creative, then there are definitely no rules.
Hmm. That's right, yeah, when you do morning pages like I did for years.
Yeah.
That's really just between you and your thoughts and the paper.
But if you're writing a novel to sell a novel, then there will be... You've got to be great in order to break really fundamental rules. Mm-hmm. So you can do it if you're Stephen King, probably.
Well, Stephen King has some quite strong ideas, doesn't he? Whether you'd call them rules or his ideas of best practice.
Yeah.
The ones that stick in the mind are to do with grammar, mine. In dialogue, him saying about not saying words other than said. Like he said, she said.
Yeah.
No murmuring or squawking or...
I break those rules. But they're not really rules, are they? Like I say, they come into that category of one person's rules.
Yes.
Or maybe even more than one person. But
one person's idea of good practice.
Yeah.
So another one that we had reason to talk about the other day because of something someone said to you was about head hopping, and I'd never heard the expression head hopping, but I rather liked it because I knew what it meant.
Yeah.
And that was about the do's and don'ts of writing in first person or third person or occasionally second person, though that's very unusual, and what you need to remember in each of those. Maybe they're not rules, but they're things you have to kind of remember.
Yeah. I think head hopping, that subject is a whole other subject, because I think you can look at it from the point of view where a writer is writing from a character's point of view and then they switch to another character's point of view, which is usually done by accident.
Yeah.
But I have seen it done. And it's usually an indication of poor writing.
Mm.
But then you can have that omniscient point of view where you're talking from a distance, so you're not in anyone's head, but then they zoom in on the head.
But they're allowed, according to the rules.
Yes, they're allowed.
If you're an omniscient, that means you're writing from a slightly more detached point of view, so you can even write about different characters in different countries and what they're thinking all in one book, because you have that bit of floating above kind of thing going on.
You float above, but then you can zoom in, and do a little section from that character and then zoom out and do a... But I think the other interesting thing is that your character only knows what your character knows, and that you can't break that rule, can you?
I don't think so. That was what got me thinking about it, because I was discussing with someone, helping them improve a piece of writing, and it was written in the first person, which is the one that makes it most difficult to do that thing, because if you're writing what I, the character, see, you have to restrict yourself to what's in front of them or what they know, or if they're trying to see what someone else is thinking, you have to kind of go with them at trying to guess what the other person's thinking. They can't actually know what the other person's thinking, for sure. They might see an indication.
Yeah.
Like someone wiping their brow might be a sign that they're nervous, or if their hands were shaking, or those kind of things. But they can't actually know it as a fact what someone else is thinking.
No, you'd have to use terms like, she seemed.
Yeah.
Or... he appeared, or so it's their it's your character's interpretation of what they think is going on in that other person's head.
But what you can do in first person is have one chapter in someone's head and second chapter in someone else's head.
Did you know when you read what I'd written, did you notice that there were some in italic?
Yes, I did.
Point of view. That's Amy's style, and so I incorporate. But I've not done that before.
Mm. But that's the thought process, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
So you can, in some way, like italics, show that you're the thought process of somebody.
Yeah. I read some advice, so a writer, and I can't remember which, it was one of the Facebook groups on writing, a new writer asked about point of view and kind of what was, I think, what was trendy or what they should be doing at the moment, and the response from, you know, more experienced writers was that because that changes all the time, it's like a fashion thing that you should kind of do what you want. And me and someone even suggested that you should innovate with it. So can you write a book from first person, from multiple characters first person? Well, the answer is, well, because there's nothing that says you can't. It's just about making it clear which characters.
Yeah. So it's easier if it's in a chapter form. So one chapter could be Henrietta writing about her experience and then the next one could be Sally or Rob talking about theirs in first person. But second person is very tricky. I've only read two books ever that were in this, in that form. You stood there, you saw me in the cafe. It's quite, it feels quite clunky, doesn't it?
It does.
But it can be done.
When I've been writing before, I've found myself slipping into that, not for a sentence.
Maybe. Yeah.
And then, obviously, when you edit, you catch it. But I think it is easy sometimes to slip into.
Yes. It works for a letter. Like, you won't have seen me for 6 months, but you'll know that I always do this. I always have two sugars in my car. You know, that kind of thing, you can do that. But the two I read, it was quite spookily used. It was quite creepy. So, yeah, but it's something to play around with. And that is a thing about rules in general, that it's probably good to sit down and think about what you're doing and play around with the perspectives or whatever.
I think you do have to know the rules, simply because people will expect you to know the rules.
Mm.
And if you are going to break them, then knowing, doing it in a conscious way is very different to doing it by accident. So you know where people use repetitive. So they might say, use the same word three times deliberately. It's very different to accidentally using the same word three times.
And I think a lot of writers don't realise that they've got pet phrases or pet words that they keep using. That's where an editor can be very useful.
Oh, yeah, essential.
So, without wanting to put you on the spot too much, which means I'm going to, of course.
Yeah.
What things have you had picked up in your writing that you can remember?
You mean, what are my bad habits?
Yeah, or just things that you weren't aware of until an editor or a reader pointed them out, or Amy.
I don't know that. I am definitely bad for using certain phrases, but I usually pick those out myself because I'm conscious of what I have a tendency to do. The thing is with Amy is she gets it quite rough, as in she's not getting a polished draft from me, she's getting quite an early draft from me. So and she's really good at saying, right, I won't do a line by line edit, I'll just do a kind of overall edit. But she can't help herself, like I won't be able to. But that's okay, because it all works to the good of the manuscript, and so ultimately it comes out. I'm aware that I'm not answering your question, but I don't know. I've been accused of doing too much telling rather than showing, but I've been accused of doing too much showing rather than telling.
Well, perhaps we ought to sort of remind people what that rule is, because we've mentioned it before, because I mentioned it being something I always try and think of now, because it's so hard to do it. But anyway, you can overdo it, as you were saying. Shall we remind people what we think it is?
So when you tell someone, you are literally giving the story, but without living the story. When you show, it's you're taking your character through the actual motions of that. And I, with my first novel, I very much took that literally. And the editor was like, I don't know what's going on here. I need some backstory, and I need to orientate myself to what's going on a little bit. So I hadn't put enough of that in. The same with exposition, which is your backstory or your... what are often termed as the boring bits, but you kind of need that and quite early on in a story.
So and these things are partly balanced, yes, and also partly they are fashion, like you said, in that some writers early on, around Dickens' time, could get away with a lot more detailed description, for example, than people generally like now. But you do need some. So an example would be, which I think we came across in our writing class, a description of a pub. You don't need to go into every detail of the pub, but some useful detail, like it smelled of pickled onions, or there was some wallpaper peeling off the wall, or something just to place your character in that pub, rather than two paragraphs describing that pub.
So one of the beta readers was quite critical because I didn't describe the character. And actually, I generally don't give a lot of detail about my characters.
I quite like that. I prefer it because often, if you've ever read a book with a character and then seen the film, you get a real shock because you've imagined this character totally and then they look completely different in the film, which can be quite off-putting, really.
Yeah, but I think that's a preference thing as well. Yeah. And possibly another way for people to orientate themselves to what's actually going on. Because if you give a description, it's quite solid. But giving a description is quite hard as well. Not to go down the route, you know, the cliche of your heroine's beautiful and your villain's ugly. That sort of...
Yeah, and your handsome, dark-haired man with gorgeous eyes. Or the auburn locks of the heroine curling over her cheek. But I suppose what we're talking about is that there are rules, but there are also other things. There's do's and don'ts that are made up by writers who've got the experience and they want to share it, which is useful. And sometimes it's helpful as well. And like you found Story Grid, which is one person's ideas about those things, really useful, so it can be. I mean, there are grammar rules, which we've talked about. But
you can break those as well.
You can break all of them, yes. I find it uncomfortable sometimes when I see one of those being broken, because that's my background. And as we've talked about, my sister's very much like that, with commas and things, but with me it might be more grammar structure, and I want to change it. I mean, things like not having a verb in a sentence, that would mean it wouldn't be a sentence, but now it is all right for people to do. Did you see that?
just not.
But I notice it. Yeah. I do notice it when that happens.
I do it deliberately sometimes.
Yeah. And that's fine too. So what did you written down here that we haven't said?
Okay. So... reasons to break the rules, creativity, which I talked about, taking a risk, because that allows you to innovate.
Yeah.
But not on your first novel. It's generally not a good rule on your first novel. Staying true to your vision. So you might need to break the rules so that you, if you do have a vision or you want something a certain way, to be able to actually meet that.
Yeah.
Breaking the rules deliberately, which we've talked about. I've got head hopping. Cliches.
What do you think about cliches?
What I usually do is put them in my first draft and then try and change them.
Find some different words.
Yeah. Or especially, you know, because I write fantasy and science fiction, if it's not Earth-based, I can't use a lot of them, so it really stops you using a lot of cliches.
Well, you nearly used one earlier about demons, do you remember?
What did I say?
Something like the character getting rid of her demons.
Yeah, that was for the blurb.
Yes, yes. But it is a sort of a cliche, isn't it? And in the end, we worked out a different way of saying it.
I think you can get away with them a bit more in blurbs, though.
Yeah.
Because it's the kind of short So, and who made the rules? That's the thing.
Well,
yes. You always got to ask.
Yes.
And that was a good point. So, the story grid one. Mm. So, people would say, well, story grid really limits you then what you can do. And what about if you want to cross genres?
Yes.
And what Sean Coyne would say is the challenges to innovate within the rules. And I think that's really interesting.
Well, it's a good phrase anyway. I think I'll write it down. Innovate within the rules.
So, how do you write a romance novel when there are billions out there?
Yeah.
And how do you make yours unique and different?
Yes.
When you've still got to have two people meet, you've still got to have them fall in love, maybe break apart, whatever. When you've got to have those things, how do you make your novel special?
Yes. Well, I read one writer who answered that question, and she said, if the conflict that is between the two, because they can't just be happy from the start, can they? If the conflict can be resolved with one conversation, she said, it's not enough of a conflict. I thought that was quite good, because it meant, obviously, you've got to keep creating more conflict or longer-term conflict or a bigger conflict.
It's why I don't like romance novels on their own.
Yeah.
I absolutely have no problem if there's a murder going on or there's a kidnapping or something else going on.
Mm.
But I need something else in just romance
Susan, what made me start thinking about rules was the fact that you've read this story grid and that I think you've said in the past it's changed the way you do your writing. Like, for one thing, you plan things more.
Yeah.
You used to say you didn't plan.
I didn't used to plan. And that's the thing, you change, don't you?
Well, I wondered if either because you've read that book or because you're self-publishing, whether you actually have more rules.
I think you're putting me on the spot now, so I might regret what I'm going to say, but I think that when I was just writing into the dark, so without a plan, I possibly had less rules, just by the very nature that you're just really going with your creativity.
Because it was more like a step up from the diary, isn't it?
Yes.
It's like first you've got diary that you can write in bed and you don't care if anyone never sees it. Then you've got what you were doing, which you kind of didn't mind if nobody ever saw.
Yeah.
Which you did when by the time I met you.
Yeah.
And now...
Well, I had to start planning. Because the thing about the writing into the dark for me, I'm not saying for everyone, maybe some people, because I know Stephen King, just that's the way he writes. And he manages to put out book after book. But some of his books are better than others, and some of them have much more structure than others.
Yeah.
So I think story's so embedded in his brain, though, that he can just do it. But for me, I would write twice as many words as I actually ended up with. So it's not, for me, it wasn't an economical way of writing, which is fine when you've not put a book out, when you're learning to write. But now I'm actually having to work to deadlines and get books out.
Yeah.
Having a plan and knowing that it's going to work. I still don't always follow the plan, though.
So what are the main rules that you think you now would stick to in your writing?
For me, story grid is structure, and it's pace, and it's making sure each scene works. So I would stick to those rules, using it promotes a certain level of conflict. It promotes movement in a scene. There aren't scenes where nothing happens. Everything moves the story forward.
Can you give a bit more example of a scene structure that is how you would do it now?
Well, you know, I've talked to you about it before, the inciting incident. So each scene has to have an inciting incident.
So that is almost like a personal rule for you now.
Yes. When I come to structure, so I'll plan out a novel and then I'll look at each individual scene. And sometimes I just write it, but if I've just written it, then I go back and look at it and make sure that it's got an inciting incident, it's got a progressive complication, which is your conflict, really, that takes you to the crisis, which is, your crisis is a question, usually. Does your protagonist go one way or another? And then it's your climax, so which way did they choose and what was the outcome, your resolution.
In each scene?
In each scene.
It's a tall order, isn't it?
But that also gives me the chapter as well. So I know where my chapter begins and where my chapter ends.
And you don't stick to a rule about the number of words or pages or chapter?
No.
Because when I set out to the book I was doing, I started with trying to copy another writer who writes so many words per chapter and so many chapters per book.
Yeah.
As a discipline. Also, because it would get me to the desired number that I wanted to get to. Sort of a rule.
I know. So I get that, though, because you do need some structure, and that's, otherwise, I mean, you can get away with just writing, but it can also take you the wrong way, and you can end up just writing, and if you enjoy writing, you get something out of it, but it depends what you want. If you want a novel at the end of it, and within a reasonable time frame, then
that a publisher or somebody would find acceptable to read. But in the case, I know you're not interested in traditional publishing, but for that you do need certain things to be there for them to bother with it. But do you think there's such a thing as too many rules, or like we shouldn't try and read too many books?
Oh, what do you mean, books
about writing, how to?
I would say no, I'd say read as many as you want, as many as you can, and take the bits that work for you.
And maybe the same can be said about writing classes and things, because you do learn a lot, don't you? I mean, we learnt a lot.
I think, like anything, though, you've got to be careful that it fits for you. And don't be put off if it doesn't, you know, that there will be something else out there that will fit. I think we were just incredibly lucky as well.
We were,
in our writing class. Because our tutor was very positive, wasn't she? And I think it's very easy to destroy people's confidence.
Yes, definitely. And she did create very good rules for that, ground rules. But they were good ground rules. And I think the fledgling writer does need to be protected.
Yeah.
And have some positives in their feedback and things like that.
Yeah.
That's one reason why, even though I know the rules of grammar and punctuation and things, I don't always choose to point things out, because you could end up scribbling in red all over somebody's lovely manuscript, couldn't you? And also because it's not a clear-cut thing anymore.
No. And it's usually when you're reading someone's manuscript, it is a work in progress and it isn't the final draft. So and that takes a level of confidence, actually, to be able to show people a piece of work that isn't your best work because it's not finished. And people's reactions to that can make or break, really. So that's why it's so important to give positive feedback.
I agree. I also think a very useful thing that Laura said in our class was when you've done your first draft, to leave it alone for a week or two and just not even look at it.
I think she said a month or two.
Was it a month?
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a good piece of advice, I think. I do think you need to park things sometimes, not necessarily at the end, but at some point that feels right. You sometimes just need to put it away for a bit and come back to it.
You see, But that doesn't mean to say you get out of writing there. Because, no. So for me, my Amy's got book two, so I'm waiting for her to read that. So it will be a little, well, it'll be a few weeks before Alex. So I will have that distance. I can't actually remember that much about it because I never can. I'm always
Because you're on to the next
what
one.
You're working. So I'm halfway through book three. So you don't have to stop writing just because you're leaving a bit of distance.
Is that a rule?
That's my rule.
It's a rule. You keep writing, keep writing.
Yeah, that's my rule for me. But I don't make rules for anyone else. I'm not Stephen King.
No. Although, I mean, having said all this about Stephen King, I do really like his book on writing.
Yeah.
It because it challenges your thinking. I mean, he has some things that are quite strict, like referred to one of them already, but the other one is about not having adverbs. And adjectives.
Oh, yeah.
And that tests your brain. I mean, I don't think you have to rule them out all the time, but I do think it's a good exercise to write without them.
I think again, it's about making more of the ones you do use because you haven't got too many in there.
Yes.
Yeah. And the other thing is, It's doing all these things consciously, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah.
So should we end on that note? Yeah. Be conscious.
Oh, hang on
or have you any other rules you want?
No, I've just got an exercise that.
Oh right, come on! Great stuff. Yeah.
So just if you're not used to writing in a journal or whatever, or even if you are, write for 10 minutes, breaking at least one writing rule. So consciously head hop or add cliches or use anything other than he said, she said. Do some telling instead of showing. Oh, and another rule, never start with dialogue. I'll break that one.
All right, good. Thank you. I shall break all of those before I see you again.
Okay, bye for now.
Thank you for listening. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter, or visit our website at divingintowriting.com. We'd love to hear from you, and if you'd like to leave us a review, we'd be ever so grateful. Bye for now.